everybody. It's Saturday night, and this is another Grid Down Radio special. We've made some changes, and as of now, I don't have the normal female co-host that I normally have here, but times change, and different things happen, and you just got to go with it. I've got a goal here now to have a more drama-free computer life, and I put people in place to help ensure that that happens, because I have a lot of people here that I value and I cherish, and the last thing I want them to have to endure when they come to my sites is a bunch of high school girls' locker room Facebook drama, and I'm not going to do that anymore. We're going to get back down to the basics of what Grid Down is about, and that is networking, and that is sharing, that is helping those people out that are new into the game of prepping and survival and hunting, and giving them the best information that we can possibly give them to help them in their endeavors. Because one thing that we should be doing, especially us that have large social networks, is spreading the good word. Spreading the word of hunting, survival, and prepping is no different than spreading the word of faith or spreading the word of politics or any other topic that's out there. It's one of those things that people don't understand on average how important it is to have something in your house to get you through the rough times. And I met this girl named Brittany a while back, and she has a lot of the same philosophies as me when it comes to reasoning for prepping. A lot of y'all have seen my article that I've written about you don't have to be a millionaire to prep. You don't have to be, but it's important to do so. And it's not just important to so you can say, well, I'm a prepper, because who cares if you're a prepper or not? I mean, I care if you're a prepper, but what I care about is that you have enough in your house to get you through any emergency situation possible. And not looking at it through the doomsday eyes, which I don't have. I don't sit around every day thinking the worst is going to happen and being preparing for the worst. I'm more like Brittany in the name of her group. I'm hoping for the best. I'm hoping that I'm never put into position of having to use the things that I've accumulated to get my family through tough times. And on top of that, there's a lot of different angles you can look at the shit hits the fan scenarios. It's not always necessarily the grid going down. It's not always necessarily an economic collapse. It could be you losing your job. Could be you losing your house. It could be a family member dying who was the main provider in your household. It could be any number of things that's not related to the end of the world, because I'll tell you right now, I've been a prepper without calling it a prepper most of my life. Didn't even know what that term was until a few years ago, and I used that prep. I was homeless for 2 years and with my family, and that first year we spent in a minivan going between campsites and hotel rooms, and if it wasn't for the prep that we did, you know that you could put 3 months of food prep in the back of a minivan and then barely take up any space in three gray tubs and three gray containers. A lot of people don't know that. It's about buying things that are smaller that go a longer way and smartly planning that space. But a lot of things that people don't take into consideration is you can have all the prep in the world, but how are you going to make it if the times are tough and you're not in a kitchen or you don't have electricity or whatever? I mean, there's all kinds of different things that you look at. It's not just collecting food. It's not just about having a water source. I mean, there's 100 different angles, 1,000 different angles that you can look at that you can get into on every given situation. And that's why I'm a firm believer in the general prep idea of 30 days, because 30 days will get most people through most emergency situations. And the beautiful thing about a 30-day prep kit is it's portable. And being portable, you can pick it up, take it to your car, stick it in your car, and drive off, and you've still got 30 days worth of grub and wherever you go, whether you're bugging in or bugging out. I'm of the bug in mentality personally. I live in North Dakota. We're preparing for a winter storm right now. One's coming in a couple of hours, and it's going to last for a day. And we're looking at getting some pretty good snow amounts. And those are the main things that we prep here for is getting through winter events. Because there's times here where I live, you're 100 miles round trip from a grocery store that you just can't make it to town, and you got to be prepared. And that's one of the beautiful things about living in a small community like I live here in North Dakota is most everybody that lives here is already a prepper, whether they call themselves one or not. So if the shit were to hit the fan and in any level here with as many people that are prepared in this community, it would be not as bad as it would be for people that live in urban environments. And that's one of the reasons I chose to come out to the country was to get away from that, because I do have a little bit of paranoia. I'm not a paranoid like a lot of the doomsday people are, but you got to have a little bit of paranoia, or else you'd just be frolicking around and skipping and not worrying about what's going to happen tomorrow. Because just because you don't see clouds on the horizon doesn't mean a storm's not coming. And that's the whole mindset of being a prepper and a survivalist is by looking towards the possibilities of things happen. So to take the foil hat doomsday out of the equation, there are so many potential disaster scenarios that are real. I'm not saying that none of the doomsday situations aren't real, because anything can happen. But the vast majority of potential things that can happen are not really based in paranoia at all. I mean, you've got to look at what happened in Katrina. What would have happened? Let's say, what if in Katrina everybody that was affected had a 30-day prep box and a way to purify water and a way to cook that food and to make that water in their closet? What if they had pre-planned enough in that community to have that together? It would have been a whole new ball game in that situation. It would have been a whole different outcome if people weren't waiting in lines and waiting in the dome that the football team plays in there for the government to come help them. They could have had a very good situation. Those people could have gotten together, put together militia bands to police their own streets. There's a lot of things that they could have planned in advance that could have changed that situation. And the same thing goes for Hurricane Sandy, and the same thing goes for many of the disasters that's happened around the world in the last 10 years. Another example would be the tidal waves in Thailand and all the surrounding areas in Southeast Asia. Those people, they weren't planning for the worst, and there was lots of stuff coming in on news links out of Thailand about the looting, the pillaging, the raping, and all the disaster that came to it. I mean, they had to have a complete military crackdown there to put a stop to that stuff. But it doesn't have to be that way, and that's the truth, because I'm so sick of politics. I'm so sick of everything involved in the politics and the heartbreak involved in it. I know it affects their life, and I vote, but you're not, I never in all the years I did political radio felt like I was helping people. And that's why I started Grid Down, and I think I've gotten away from that in the last few months, being involved in writing a book and being involved in a few other things. I've lost track of what's important, and the most important thing, like I said earlier, is spreading the truth. And the truth is anything can happen weather-wise, natural event, winter storm, drought, a riot, a freaking riot. two big examples of riots in communities in the United States. That can happen in any urban community in the United States, in any big city. What if you live in one of those big cities? What's your contingency plan? What are you going to do? What are you going to teach your kids? What are you going to tell your kids to do if something like that happens? Everybody in the family has to be involved in the training. Everybody has to know exactly what they got to do in those kind of situations. And I'd have to say in the last couple of years, urban warfare, riots in an urban scenario have become one of the realest forms of disaster that we potentially face here in the United States with all the unrest about the police that's been going on. I'm not going to get into the politics of it all because I do have opinions about it. But if you want to see my opinions about that stuff, you're going to have to sign up to Tea Party Stand Up because I'm not getting into those opinions here on Grid Down. But I will say it's a life lesson. It's a life lesson. You got to look back to the riots that happened in Los Angeles years ago. The Korean store owners there got up on top of their buildings. They knew exactly what they were going to do. They knew exactly what to do. And when the smoke cleared, those Korean establishments were still standing while everything next door to them was in burning rubble because they got up on their rooftops in a concerted effort to protect their property and to protect their livelihood. And all of this fits into prepping and survival. All of it does. And these are real life scenarios. You don't have to sit there and obsess about the end of the world and the end of the world coming when there's so much stuff already right in our face that is a danger to our lives, a danger to our lifestyles, a danger to our country, and all good reasons to prep. But the fact of the matter is, not everybody is a millionaire. But that's no excuse not to be ready. Yeah, it's an excuse to not have a lot of those cool toys that the people with money have, but it's still no excuse to not have a suitable prep for your family. It's not something you do because you're paranoid. It's something you do because it's no different than taking out a life insurance policy so your family isn't stuck with your burial expense. Prep in your closet is an insurance policy. Nothing more than an insurance policy to get you through hard times. And if more people heard it from that perspective, there would be more people out there prepping. But we have shows like Doomsday Preppers, which is a cool show, and I've seen a lot of cool things, and even met a person that was on that show, Nick Klein, with Hostile Hairs. That's a phenomenal guy. I mean, that guy made a freaking flamethrower out of rabbit poop, only using rabbit poop and PVC and a couple of parts around the house. That dude makes a freaking rabbit poop flamethrower. I mean, that's the cool shit you see on Doomsday Preppers. But for the most part, shows like that give us regular people out there that are trying to spread the truth about the importance of self-sustainability and the need to prep and learn a survival skill set a bad name. Because we're all not sitting here waiting for the Mayan calendar to end. We're not. We just have kids, we have wives, we have family, some of us just ourselves, and we want to survive, and we want to take care of everybody. And as parents, it's our duty to make sure our kids are taken care of by any way and means. And the easiest way to take care of your kids in a situation like Katrina would have been when they told you to leave, to get the hell out, and when you got the hell out, you picked up your 30-day prep kit for 5 or 8 or 3 or 2, however many you built it for, and you hit the road, you get away from the disaster, you've got food, you got a way for fresh water, and everybody's happy, the storm blows over, you go back. Well, everybody's not happy, obviously, because so many people lost their homes, but you definitely should be happy when you got your life and you're not struggling and you're not being brutalized by gangs. You're not being raped in broad freaking daylight like a lot of women faced during that time. It would have just taken a community getting together, and that's what we need to be doing as regular everyday people in everyday life. The majority is by getting more people around us to do it, using our internet resources to get more people to do it, and not over inundate them with the notion of the sky is falling, the sky is falling, the sky is falling. And not doing the crying wolf thing, like that old story about the kid crying wolf. I'm not going to go into it, as I know everybody here has heard it in their life. But still, that's a problem with a lot of the conspiracy sites is yeah, they preach a good game on prepping and survival, but they lose people on that whole doomsday thing. They freaking lose them, and they just don't lose them for a little bit. They lose them forever. They say those people are nothing but a bunch of crackpots, and that's what I'm doing here on Grid Down, is to show everybody I can that being a prepper, being prepared, having a survival skill set, and being the hunter is not a far-fetched idea. It's not a notion of craziness. It's not me sitting here waiting for the end of the world. I don't fear anything that's happening in the future. It hasn't happened yet. But I don't fear it doesn't mean I don't know that something potentially can happen. We all live in areas that have its inherent dangers, whether it be on the coast, whether you live near a volcano, whether you live in a place where there's hellacious winter storms, whether you live in Tornado Alley between Texas all the way up to southern North Dakota, or you live in Florida, where Florida is the one place that you're most likely to get bit by a shark and struck by lightning. So every place has its inherent danger. Everybody should have that in mind, and it doesn't make you a paranoid freak prep. I started small. Today, I've got a year in my basement, a year's worth of food for my family. It's not good food. It'll be crappy eating, but we'll all survive. And like I said, I don't prep for foil hat reasons. I prep because it's my responsibility as dad to make sure my family's taken care of in rough times. And on that note, I'm going to bring in my special guest tonight, Brittany. And go ahead and tell them what group you're from, Brittany.
Hey, good evening, everyone. I'm from Preparing for the Worst, Helping for the Best. We're just a Facebook group that really just takes that philosophy and tries to share it with everyone that wants to listen. We have several files that we don't really try to reinvent the wheel. And, you know, there's so many resources out there on the internet where you can learn how to build a bug out bag. And in fact, that's how my site came to be about, was I was tired of talking about bug out bags and, you know, shit at the fan scenarios, that I needed something that would nourish the rest of the prepping that goes into actually prepping, which leads people into homesteading like you have done yourself. So with that being said, we the group that I represent, we have discussion on how to prep and best practices for prepping from folks from all over the U.S. and even some beyond, that discuss food safety, medical preparation, water sanitation, just the basic stuff that you can pretty much find anywhere else. But we do limit our group to not discussing why we prep, because I feel that detracts from the overall conversation, and then you get into those tinfoil hatters we all know and love. So that's pretty much what our group is about.
Awesome. I got into a little bit in my beginning of the show rant there about the differences between urban survival and rural survival, and how nice it is being in a small town like I am. And you sent me something earlier that really discusses what a real-life shit-hit-the-fan scenario was like for a gentleman that was in Bosnia. And if anybody out there don't know where Bosnia is, it's part of the old Yugoslavia Republic, when the Soviets had it, and it broke up into multiple states, and Bosnia was a part of Serbia, and the Serbian government was putting down the uprising, and they surrounded this city in Bosnia, and you sent me this dynamite article about this guy's life during that time, and I would like you to go in depth over that, Brittany.
Sure, no problem. So I don't really know the backstory of what happened in Bosnia at this time. I was a child in grade school, but I can tell you that when you read this article, and I've shared it on my page, and I believe I've shared it on your group as well, it's just such a wonderful story to get you in the mindset of what was really going on. This guy, overall, really pushed the importance of how important it was to be in a group survival setting, not the lone wolf, because you can't stay awake 24/7. You can't guard your food while you're cooking your food. It's just pretty much simple survival instincts to be with a group of people and splitting up the duties amongst others. And that to me, is a big takeaway, because some folks and you run across when you're networking with other preppers, you run into the folks who say, well, I'm just going to sit on top of my mountain of bullets and food and Band-Aids and going to ride this thing out. And I always feel uneasy when I hear that, unless you're a true mountain man and you know how to get yourself so far from society and you are able to deal with psychological effects of being isolated like that, that really the best chance of survival for anything that was going to happen in like a long-term scenario would be in a group setting. So this guy says that when this happened,
you can read the article, Brittany,
sure,
if you want to.
Okay.
That would be the easiest way to purvey it, and then we'll talk about it.
All right. To read it, it would I just want to reference the original place that this article showed up. You can't get to it unless you are a part of the survivalist boards, and this article was shared on shithitthefanplan.com and then has been shared several times again through Natural News and other places. So to find the original source, you'd have to go to Survival Boards to read it there. But it reads like it shares his story, and then it shares the Q&A section afterwards where he answers questions. Do you want me to start from the beginning from where it says from Selco?
Yeah, just do it all, Brittany.
No problem.
We got 34 minutes here to kill before we take calls. So,
no problem.
So let's get that information out there, because that's what I want to highlight today is prepping don't always work out the way that people plan.
Right.
And this story is a good example of how you have to improvise.
And this story, I guarantee our listeners that if you haven't had a chance to read this story, I really want you to go back after this. I'm going to read it, but I really want you to go follow up and read it so you can kind of think about it and put yourself in the situation when you go to read it yourself, okay? So it says, from Selco.
You also got to excuse some of the English. The guy didn't speak very good English, so she's going to be reading straight from the article. And it's not her, it's the guy writing the article. Go ahead, Brittany.
Sure. Okay, I want to share with you my own experience. Be patient with my English, I'm from far away. I am from Bosnia, and as some of you know, it is hell from here between the years of 92 to 95. Anyways, for one whole year, I lived and survived in a city of 50 to 60,000 residents without electricity, fuel, running water, real food distribution or distribution of any goods or any kind of organized law or government. The city was surrounded for 1 year, and in that city, actually, it was a shit hit the fan situation. We did not have an organized army or police force. There were groups of defenders, actually anybody who had a gun, fought for his own house and for his own family. Some of us were better prepared, but most of the families had food for a couple of days. Some of us had pistol. Few owned AK-47 when all started. Anyway, after 1 month or two, gangs started with their nasty jobs. Hospital looked like a butchery. Police force managed. 80% of the hospital staff gone from home. I was lucky. My family was big in that time, 15 members in one house, 5 to 6 pistols, 3 Kalashnikovs. So we lived and survived. Say that word for me.
A Kalashnikov. It's an AK-47.
So we lived and survived, most of us. I remember U.S. Air Force drop MRE every 10 days. God bless the USA for that. As help for the surrounded city, it was just not enough. Some of the houses had little gardens with some vegetables. Most did not. After 3 months, rumors started about first deaths from starvation, deaths from low temperatures. We stripped every door, window frame from abandoned houses for heating. I burned all of my own furniture from heating. Lots of people died from diseases, mostly from bad water. 2 of my family members. That's terrible. We used rainwater to drink. Several times I ate pigeons. Once I ate rat. Money did not worth shit. We traded things. Black market work, for example. One corned beef can could get you to have a woman for a couple of hours. Sounds bad, but it was reality. I remember most that women were just desperate mothers. Candles, lighters, antibiotics, fuel, batteries, rifle ammo, and of course food. We fight like animals for that. In situations like that, lots of things change. Most people turn into monsters. It was ugly. Strength was in numbers. If you were alone in the house, you probably been robbed or killed, no matter how well armed. Anyways, war ended again thanks to America, and again, God bless USA for that. It was not important which side had right in that war. It was almost 20 years ago, but believe me, for me it was just like yesterday. I remember everything, and I think I learned a lot. Me and my family are prepared now. I am well armed, stock educated. It is not important what's going to happen, earthquake, war, tsunami, alien, terrorist, it's an important thing that something's going to be. And from my experience, you cannot survive alone. Strength is in numbers. Speak with your family. Prepare with them. Choose your friends wisely and prepare with them too. At the end, this is my first post. My English not so good, so don't judge me too hard.
He's definitely self-conscious of it, but he did a great job. And I definitely got the feeling from it. It's not something that most Americans can ever imagine, having government forces surrounding a city and keeping anything from coming in or going out, and what it does to the average everyday citizen. And he really shines a light on it, and it definitely opened his eyes to prepping and survival. And that's what we gotta get across to people is. You don't want to wait until it's too late. You don't want to be the grasshopper. The grasshopper eat a whole field of grain and then starve because there's nothing left. They don't even care about the future generations of grasshoppers. They only care about now. And that's the way most people are. I mean, you see it every time, days before a disaster, whenever every grocery store shelf is stripped clean of everything. As most stores only have 3 days worth of stuff in them anyways, and you just can't wait to the last minute. That guy's lucky he survived. He's lucky that he had the head about him and his family had it about them that they were able to put it together and survive that year. They get a huge salute from me. What they did was amazing, and I look up to that guy for that.
I couldn't imagine living in that situation myself. We got some reverb here on my mic.
You sound good on my end. Hey, what's your friend's area code? Is he on?
Steve or Philip?
The guy you wanted to have on tonight.
He's not in yet. He said he would be in around 10.
Okay, cool. All right, so we'll give some extra time after 10 o'clock when he calls in the show for him to talk. This guy is from Germany, and he's going to come in and talk about what happened after World War One in Germany with inflation, and I mean those things they are the extreme situations, but they're the extreme situations of reality that has happened in this country or in this world before. It's history. It's happened. So it's a real life scenario, and the way our country's heading, if we don't teach our kids self-sustainability and how to prep and give them a survival skill set, then we're not doing our jobs as parents, because this is the first time in our nation's history that more people in this country think they're handing down a worse country than what was handed to them. And 65% of Americans believe that, and that's a first time ever in our country's history that has happened. And it's worse times are coming. I'm not saying the end of the world is coming, but worse times are coming, and everybody needs to understand a little bit of self-sustainability, because you might need it. And I'm actually going to do something new this year. I'm going to start a tomato garden. I'm going to get into gardening. I hope to provide all my tomatoes all summer long, and it be my first jump into gardening, other than some fruit, when I used to live in a place that had great soil in Texas, Black Soil Plain in Grapevine, Texas, some of the best soil in the world for growing. That's why they got great vineyards there. But other than that, that's a phenomenal story, Brittany. You want to get to a couple of callers here?
No problem. No problem.
All right, we'll start with 361-970. You're on. 970,
hello.
Brian.
Hello.
Hello, Brian. Well, Brian must be busy. We'll put him on hold for a minute. All right, let's head down to 812. 812, you're on. Hello, 812, you're on. Nope, we'll come back to 812 later. 920, you're on.
Hey, Rambo, it's Kim.
Hi, Kim. How are you doing tonight?
I got lucky. I just got out of the truck stop. I'm here.
Well, Brittany, Kim is one of our regular callers, and she is a truck driver.
That's great. It's good to hear other females out there doing male-dominated jobs.
So what's special about Kim, Brittany, is Kim preps in her semi-truck, not just for herself, but for a dog and a rabbit, too.
That's right.
So why don't you tell
everybody
again? What
type of dog you got up in there?
What was that?
What type of dog you got?
What type of dog you got? German Shepherd.
A good choice.
So Kim, tell Brittany here what you do for prepping your truck.
I do a lot of stuff. I buy food. In fact, if I have to, rabbit food, dog is trying to pull a cart if I have to get out of the truck and move by foot.
Well, that's awesome. That's something new I didn't hear you say before. So you got this dog trained to carry your stuff in a cart. That's freaking awesome.
Well, I've got a really bad echo. I'm going to try and call back in a second, okay?
All right.
Yeah, I think I need to do the same. If you could grab another caller here while I call back, because I hear myself.
All right, go ahead. Hey, Bubba.
Yeah, what's up, Johnny?
So tell me, Bubba, tell everybody about your garden this year.
Oh, I got a little bit of garden in the city. Not very much. I've got pepper plants, squash, zucchini, tomatoes, corn, okra. That's what I pretty much try to do every year here.
So do you can it?
Oh yeah, we can it. Make salsa. Tomato sandwiches. I love tomato sandwiches. Whatever we can. We can a lot. And you know, some grown animals and stuff too.
That's awesome, Bubba. Yeah, Bubba is totally one of our self-sustainers here. He gardens and he hunts, and he's got a pretty good situation. I think you're back, Brittany.
Hey there. I guess you don't hear the reverb because I heard it on Bubba's speakers as well when he spoke.
Yeah, I don't hear it at all. But if it's real bad, we'll just call it early. If it's real bad, we'll just call it early. Okay, good. Here, let's see if my brother is back yet. 970, Brian, you there? Nope, I've got a brother here who's into oil fields, and he listens to the show from the oil patch.
All right.
So, Brittany,
I got something for you, Rambo.
Go ahead.
Wanted to get back to that article, if you were willing, to go around to that question, the questions that were asked of him, because those were, I think, the meat and potatoes of the article.
Yeah, go for it. Go for it. Let's do it.
All right. So we talked a few minutes ago about Selco and Bosnia in the years of 92 to 95 when the city was, he was in, was shut off from the rest of the world. I read the article a little bit ago that just where he was pretty self-conscious about it, but he wrote this article and then there was a question and answering section, and that's where I'm fixing to go over. And the first question was, well, how did you get around safely? And he says that this actual city was broken into something like a lot of street communities. In my street, 15 to 20 houses, we organized patrols. 5 armed men every night to watch on gangs or enemies. I think that's what we would be doing in our little cul-de-sacs and communities. Hopefully we'd be able to band together, and that's a really important thing is having that group community and knowing your neighbor, which isn't very common these days in the big cities. So they traded things between people on the street. 5 miles of my street, there was one street with something like organized trades, but it was very dangerous to go there. It worked only during the nighttime. During the day, it was Sniper Alley, and you had to be more chance to be robbed there than trade. I used that street only 2 times, and believe me, only when I needed something really bad. What about wood? It looked like there are many forests around your city. What did you have to burn for doors and furniture? Why did you have to burn your doors and furniture? First, thank you for your question. I did not expect this amount of interest in my post. I'll be glad to share with you a lot of things with you guys, because you want to learn. Anyway, Bosnia has a lot of woods and forests when you check the map, but I live in a city closer to the Croatian border, more to the south, and I don't want to mention the name of the city, but if you check the map, south part of my country closer to Croatia is still all rock. Yes, we had some trees in my city, parks, fruit trees, but most of the city was building and houses. But believe me, all the trees in the city is going to be burned very fast when you don't have electricity for cooking and heating. After all that, what you have is furniture, doors, and wooden floors. And believe me, all that stuff is burning fast, too. There was almost no car to use in the town because most of the roads were jammed with ruins, abandoned cars, destroyed houses and stuff. The petrol was like gold. If I needed to go somewhere, I almost always used the night time. Never went alone, but also never in a big group. 2 to 3 man, maybe. Always armed, very fast, always in shadows, through ruins, rarely open on the street, actually always in hiding. We did not have suburbs or farmers. In suburbs, we're like enemy army. We were surrounded with enemy army, and inside the town, you did not know who was the enemy. And yes, there were organized groups of gangs, 10 to 15 people, sometimes even 50, but there were also normal people like you and me, fathers, granddads, decent folks who robbed and killed. There was not too much good and bad guys. Most of us were gray, ready for anything. The next question was, did you prep and what kind of skills did you need?
We used what we had, and we were not prepared for the situation. We did not know what was prepping. So can you imagine in some aspects we go back to Stone Age, almost actually most of we used everything we had. For one example, I had not store big bottle cylinder, and I did not use it for cooking or heating. It was too valuable. I managed to build and fix up my bottle so my friend could attach a hose on some kind of the vent. He doesn't know the right word for it, but he was able to fill disposable lighters. They're not disposable if you know how to. Those lighters were like a small fortune. To make a short story, somebody bring the empty lighter to me, and I fill that lighter with gas. I usually took one can for that, or one candle, or whatever he could offer me. For one more example, I'm a registered nurse, and in that time, my knowledge was a thing for trade. And yes, being trained and educated in times like that was worth a fortune if you know how to fix things. All your goods is going to be exhausted one day, but your specific knowledge can be your food. I learned to fix many things, sugar people, whatever you can. My neighbor used to know how to make some kind of oil for oil lamps. Oil and glass, piece of rope. He was never hungry. He never showed me how to make that oil. I believe he used some tree behind his house and a small amount of diesel. I don't know. My point is learn things. People always need someone to know how to fix things. It was not a survival movie. It was ugly. We did what we had to survive. Nobody wins. We just survived with a lot of bad dreams.
A lot of bad dreams.
So,
yeah, I bet there's a lot of bad dreams. You got it again?
Yeah.
Because I got I've got every mic shut off but yours and mine.
Let me call
are you
back.
On speaker?
You
are you on speaker?
No, I just had my headset plugged in, sir.
Try pulling your headset.
Let's see if that works.
Can you hear me now?
I hear you now.
No.
You still,
no, I still
you
have
still
that
hearing?
Reverb.
All right, try again.
All right.
Yeah, I'd like to apologize to everybody who's listening. We periodically have technical difficulties. That's one of the issues about going through a server like Blog Talk Radio. I've intended on researching other different avenues, but I've been with Blog Talk Radio for so many years and understand the switchboard and all that, and it's done me pretty good. But it's frustrating when you're dealing with technical difficulties. It's freaking frustrating, but it is what it is, and we do the best we can with what we have, and we go on. No different than prepping and learning survival skill sets. Go ahead, Brittany.
Hey, folks. All right, it's six.
Right.
Nope, it's
nope.
That.
Well, we can call it early tonight and try again another time if it's that bad that you can't deal with it, because I'm not hearing it at all.
It's not so bad that
it's
I can't
so
work around it.
Work around it.
But
let's,
yeah, thank you,
Bubba.
Are
let's
hearing
ask
it.
Bubba if he's hearing it. Bubba, you hearing it?
Yes, sir. I hear.
How bad is it?
Hearing is pretty bad. Yours is clear. Yours is still bad.
Do you got two phones in your house on at the same time, Brittany?
No, we don't. I'm in one room with my computer.
Okay, so I've got a 979-645 and a 979-739. That's why I was asking.
I've just got one phone on.
All right. Well, let's wrap this up here and let's get it. Is there any more left in that article?
There is, and I've shared the article on your page.
Well, I wanted to give you a little background here before we get off so you can understand what happened before. The Yugoslavian Republic, after the fall of the Soviet Union, broke up into a lot of different states. The biggest one was, the leader of the biggest of those countries was Slobodan Milosevic. And Bosnia was a part of his realm. And Bosnia wanted to be free from them. So they revolted. And that was all the everything leading up to that city being surrounded was everything dealing with ethnic cleansing is what was on the news over here, because the Serbians were killing the Bosnians, and that's what brought the United States in under the Clinton administration to do the air part of the combat and bring an end to that situation there. But basically, the Serbians were just fighting for land that was traditionally theirs, and the Muslims were fighting for their own homeland. But ultimately, the United States backed Bosnia, and Bosnia got their independence. And in their journey to independence, they had to go through that year of being surrounded by government troops. So I hope that helps you out a little bit, Brittany.
No, thank you. Yeah. Okay.
Hey, let's check
on calling
eight.
In.
Okay, 813, you're on. Or,
hey,
hold
this
on.
Is Aaron from
Hey, Brittany.
Hey, Aaron.
Hey, are you guys hearing the reverb with me too, or? Hey, Rambo, thanks for having me on.
So Brittany told me that you have some stories about, is this the guy with the stories about Germany?
No, this is my friend Aaron from Facebook.
Oh, okay. Well, you know what our topic is tonight, don't you, Aaron?
Hey, go on, Aaron.
Hello?
Oh, I think he's off because he says a horror. Horrible quality of the reverb. Do you have another caller?
I think we'll call it a night, and I'll get with you tomorrow, and we'll schedule for two weeks from now. It sucks when this happens, but sometimes it happens.
That's no problem. We just got to do what we just got to do.
Well, thank you, Brittany, for coming on. It's a great topic. I wish we could have finished it, but everybody's hearing reverb that I'm not hearing, so we can't do that. That sucks to listen to.
Let me try Philip, and I'll get off the phone.
Okay, he's got a call back in. He's 812, right? Or is he 918?
No, he is.
918.
Yep,
918, you're on.
Yeah, hello, this is Philip, the guy from Germany.
Oh, hello.
Hello, I'm glad talking to you.
Yeah, Brittany dropped off, so the reverb won't be as bad. We're hoping. Let's check with Bubba first. Bubba, is the reverb better?
It's a little bit better.
Okay, so this is the guy from Germany that was calling tonight, and he was going to share a story with us about what happened with the economic collapse in Germany in the 1930s and the late 20s that led up to World War II, and how real an economic collapse can be and what it leads to. So go ahead, tell us about it.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it. It was, remember, Weimar Republic right after World War One, and Germany had to pay a lot of fines to the other countries in the First World War. And all this had to be paid in gold, so to say. They called it gold mark. And the government's idea to get it paid was print more money. So all it did was just printing and printing more and more money. The value of the money decreases. And they were printing it so fast that they could only print one side of the note because they didn't have enough time to flip it over and print the other side. People were going with wheelbarrows to go buy bread, to buy butter, for I mean, the value of the money changed within a week, and it lost 10 times the value as it had before. So your paycheck on one week's Friday will be different than it would be on the next week.
For example, you're making $10 an hour, and the next week that money is only worth $5 an hour, even though you're still getting $10 an hour.
Yes, but that would be only a 50% decrease. And this
right.
was 100 times. So if you made at $10 an hour, you only made $1 an hour the next week.
Right. Okay, I see. That's freaking terrible. I couldn't even imagine that happening here. And the way our government's heading here, it's a reality later on down the road that something like that could happen.
Unfortunately, it looks that way because we are printing more. Our debt has almost doubled. It is pretty insane what can happen. It happened fast. I mean, it was a week and your money was worthless.
So when were you you had family that lived through through those times?
Yes, my great-grandmother, she actually was born in 1897, and she told me about this time and how crazy it was. And the kids used it as, they used it like Monopoly money to play with.
Wow.
Sweeping it off the road. It was worth flying around. And it was a crazy time. And because of it,
So it'd be cheaper to wipe your butt with the money than buy toilet paper, huh?
Yes. That bad.
That bad. It's freaking crazy. I know I've read about it in the history books, but it's better to hear about it from a German who had family that lived through it.
Yeah, it was a crazy time as I heard it. And that is the reason Hitler did get elected. He created more work. He had a new currency in place that would be stabilized. And of course, the people were voting for that.
Right. Well, we're having technical difficulties tonight. Everybody's hearing a bunch of reverb. So I'm going to have to shut the show down. I'd like to have you on another time. So maybe we can work that out between you and Brittany. I'm going to end it tonight because the quality is just terrible that's coming out of everybody's speakers.
Yeah, I would like to be there the next time.
So this is just a good practice show for Brittany. It's Mother's Day weekend anyways. And that's one thing I want to do here is wish all the mothers a happy Mother's Day. A lot of y'all do a job that I don't want to do. and my wife definitely earns her Mother's Day gift. She's a great mother. My mother, too. And I just hope that all you mothers out there hear from the ones you love. That's what Mother's Day is supposed to be about, and y'all all deserve it. So, happy Mother's Day to everybody. All right. Well, thank you from Germany. You're not in Germany now. You're in the United States, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, I just
grew up
there.
But you're from Germany. But you're from Germany. You definitely have the accent. Yeah, I've got, from my second marriage, a mother-in-law that's from Germany. We call Oma.
Oma, yeah, it means grandmother.
Yeah, and I live in a German community here in North Dakota.
Oh, that is nice.
Yeah, I didn't know what Nephla soup was until I got here.
Oh, yeah. It was nice.
Well, go ahead.
I have a feedback show too. It's hard for me to hear. But I'm looking forward to be there again, and hopefully it works better.
Yeah, it'll work better next time. It always does. We have periodic bouts with technical issues. It's just the way it is. All right. Have a good night. Thank you, everybody, for coming. I hate to end the show early, but the quality sucks, so I'm going to. Bye.
All right. Thank you. Goodbye.